This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the High Yield Cash Account on public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A High Yield Cash Account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Well, here we all are, waiting on Jay Powell again. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, the 19th day of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. All right, come on, say it with me now. Jay Powell. Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve. Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve and interest rates. That's the whole economic ball of wax this week as the Federal Open Market Committee meets tomorrow and Wednesday to decide how much they are going to raise interest rates. Spoiler alert, they've already decided. They're just not going to tell us until Wednesday. The smart money is on a 0.75 percentage point bump. Consult your own financial advisor on that, of course. As the Fed tries to tighten financial conditions, make money more scarce, basically, as a way to cool off this economy. Among the other things a rate hike is going to do is to push mortgages even higher, which brings us to new homebuilder confidence numbers out this morning from the National Association of Home Builders. They're a tad blue, homebuilders are. Sentiment fell in September for the 9th month in a row. Marketplace's Justin Ho explains what is going on.
Homebuilders have already been paying more for labor and materials. Now they're also paying higher interest rates on construction loans.
It puts, you know, additional costs to the project that you just have to account for, just like if you have an uptick in lumber.
That's John Kirk, managing director at Embry Partners, a development company based in San Antonio that builds rental units. He says for a $100 million construction project, he'll typically finance about 60 to 70% of the total cost. And if the interest rate on that borrowing goes up, Kirk says he might think twice about a new project.
It has to make sense economically. And so you have to underwrite, you know, what you think the rents are going to be, what you're going to build it for. And are we, you know, as a developer, are you going to take on that risk?
That's why rising interest rates can cause homebuilder confidence to fall, says Susan Wachter, a real estate professor at the Wharton School.
And with that, of course, construction will fall as well and will fall off. And that's going to, in fact, make housing prices go up.
Which is not exactly the goal of the Fed's interest rate hikes, says Brian Lancaster, a professor at the Columbia Business School.
In some ways, I say the Fed, in trying to kill inflation, is shooting itself in the foot inflation-wise, in terms of housing anyway.
Lancaster says a slowdown in housing construction would likely affect single-family homes, where construction costs are rising and home prices are starting to moderate. But multifamily and apartment construction projects might still go forward because rents are up.
Landlords or developers of multifamily are raising rents because that's their revenue, and that's helping to offset inflationary costs of building and the higher costs of borrowing.
Problem is, he says, higher rents mean more inflation, and then the Fed might consider raising rates even more. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, modestly higher, moderately higher, you might say, as traders wait for word from Powell et al. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. As I said a minute ago, there might as well not be any news in this economy this week till Wednesday afternoon at 2 Washington time when the Fed makes its interest rate announcement and then Chair Powell takes questions. It's not at all an exaggeration to say that economists and economic journalists and corporate executives and politicians are going to be parsing every last word of what Powell says for hints about what the Fed has in store for this economy. But we figured, why wait? Why not get ahead of the parsing? Specifically, we are going to dissect the phrase soft landing right now, the oft-repeated metaphor that I think Powell, but certainly analysts and economists and yours truly have used to describe what the Fed's been trying to do most of the past year, get inflation under control without seriously damaging the economy. Turns out that phrase, soft landing, didn't exactly come out of nowhere. Marketplace's Matt Levin is on the etymology beat today.
When I hear the phrase soft landing, this is kind of what I picture.
Attention passengers, this is your captain, Jay Powell speaking. Wanted to give you a heads up that you may feel some turbulence on our descent. That big old storm in Eastern Europe is messing a bit with our glide path, and things might get a bit bumpy for those of you back in the economy cabin. But we'll try to make things as smooth as we can.
Economics loves its aeronautics terms. Headwinds, tailwinds, glide paths, even the word bailout when you really think about it. The phrase soft landing, though, originates from far above the cruising altitude of most economic metaphors.
It was really the space race between the U.S. and the Soviet Union that was getting so much attention.
Ben Zimmer is a linguist and writes about the history of financial terms for the Wall Street Journal. Americans had space fever in the late 60s and early 70s. So with prices rising in 1973, Zimmer says Treasury Secretary George Shultz invoked the term soft landing to describe how a mild economic cool down could help inflation.
What we're trying to do with the economy is similar to, in this metaphorical way, trying to guide a lunar capsule to the surface of the moon.
Unlike NASA, neither the Nixon administration nor the Fed at the time actually succeeded. But with all due respect to Neil Armstrong, we've landed on the moon 6 times. We've executed a perfect economic soft landing once.
There's an old expression about whether you'd rather be lucky than good. To do a perfect soft landing, you have to be both lucky and good. So we were good in our decision making and we were lucky.
Alan Blinder started as vice chair of the Federal Reserve in 1994. The chair was Alan Greenspan. At the time, inflation was at 3%, really not that bad. And GDP growth and unemployment were pretty good. But the Fed thought if it didn't raise interest rates, the real rate had been zero for a while, inflation was just around the corner.
If you want to get a soft landing, it's a good idea to get started early so you don't have to really slam on the brakes.
This was not popular. The best the Fed had done in the past were soft-ish landings that still produce mild downturns. Nevertheless, the Fed went ahead and doubled the federal funds rate over the course of 13 months. And it worked. Inflation stayed low, the economy still grew, and the labor market was great.
Do you remember a FOMC meeting where you guys all turned around to each other and screamed, "We did it," and high-fived?
No. The Federal Open Market Committee is not like that. You don't see a lot of high-fiving or gesticulation or even changes in facial expression.
Blinder thinks the phrase soft landing is fine. It's a way to communicate to the public what the Fed's goals are, even if it oversimplifies things. But economist Vincent Reinhardt is not a fan. He was also at the Fed in the 90s and says there's a reason Greenspan didn't use the metaphor very frequently.
I think it suggests more control of the economy than the central bank really has.
Jay Powell has no say in the Russian invasion of Ukraine or China's COVID lockdowns or even last year's stimulus checks. The Fed in the mid-90s didn't deal with anything like that. Reinhardt says if we're going to torture the soft landing metaphor, it's more accurate to make it a bit more cinematic.
Maverick, we're going to be coming around on our tail. We got to get out of here.
I can't leave ice.
The right image is you're actually a carrier pilot trying to land a plane in a storm on the carrier deck. When you say soft landing, you're saying, trust me, I'm Tom Cruise.
The Fed looks like it's moving away from the soft landing metaphor now as inflation stays high. Chairman Powell's recent speech at Jackson Hole was anything but soft, emphasizing the pain that will come with rate hikes. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
There is news of, well, there's news of stealing in this economy today. Wegmans, the grocery chain, says it's getting rid of its self-checkout app because apparently people aren't exactly being scrupulous in what they're putting in their shopping carts and what they're paying for. And in point of fact, the National Retail Federation is out with its new retail security survey, which says retail shrink, that is the broad phrase for everything from theft to gift card fraud and inventory mismanagement, it accounts for nearly $95 billion worth of losses last year, about $5 billion more than the year before. A reason, perhaps, that in addition to the changes at Wegmans, some of the biggies like Target and Walgreens have closed some stores or they've shortened hours because of those thefts. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab is on retail for us today.
The kind of theft that's mostly happening isn't run-of-the-mill shoplifting. It's organized crime, says Mark Matthews at the National Retail Federation.
It ranges from, you know, incredibly sneaky to, you know, incredibly overt.
Maybe you've seen stories about people running into stores and grabbing items in plain sight. Matthew says thieves are usually not so dramatic and much more calculated.
They're smart. They'll often steal just below the felony threshold, and they're also aiming for certain types of products.
Like denim, ink cartridges, and teeth whitening strips, items that are easy to pocket and have a high resale value. Close to 40% of retail shrink is people coming into stores to steal. Nearly 30% is theft by employees. Carl Langhorst teaches retail asset protection at the University of Cincinnati.
It could be theft of product. It could be outright cash theft, credit card fraud, discount products, fraudulently two for ones.
There are plenty of ways retailers try to prevent theft. More security cameras, software that recognizes strange buying patterns, including at self-checkout. Langhorst says the most effective method is low-tech.
Let's say it's a clothing store and they have a handful of blue jeans. Can I hold those for you at the register until you're ready to check out?
That tells thieves employees are engaged, which also increases perceived safety for shoppers. Reed Hayes, who directs the Loss Prevention Research Council, says relying too much on security tags and locking up products can create a hostile shopping environment.
And the place can become a place that nobody wants to work, that very few want to shop in.
He says when retailers stop selling certain products or close altogether, the biggest loss is convenience for shoppers and jobs to a community. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
After a year, sometimes more, of virtual school, a lot of districts around the country are really getting back into gear this fall. And that means programs that might have been changed or outright canceled during the pandemic, I'm thinking band and orchestra to be specific here, are having to start up all over again. So what is a parent to do when the violins and the clarinets and the trombones that got shoved into the back of the closet at the beginning of the pandemic are all the way out of tune? Well, that is today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Avery McDaniel. I'm the owner and repair technician at McDaniel Music Repair in Beloit, Wisconsin. So at least in this part of the country and with the way that our current business structure is set up, almost all of our business goes through the schools. School accounts that send in repairs are the schools that need to purchase things, and then especially the rental contracts that go through the schools is just literally what pays the payroll and main bills. Most summers we end up being fairly busy as it is. We go through and spend most of the summer doing a minor amount of overtime every week. Most of us are running between about 45 and 50 hours a week, you know, starting the 1st of June and going all the way up until Labor Day. The issue we're running into this year, as opposed to other years, is the work that has to get done on the instruments we're working on. They're more involved repairs because they've been in our project piles for a while. I know, like, the other technician, he did 60 hours last week. In the next 3 weeks, I have a grand total of 5 hours that are not already allocated somewhere. We started noticing about 2 weeks ago that we were running very low on an instrument that we never thought we'd be running out of, which are clarinets. It was always one of those instruments that we had just stacks and stacks of clarinets, and we've never been running out of them before. And then all of a sudden we run out, and we start kind of checking some of the numbers. You know, year to date, from last year to this year, we had a 40% increase in clarinet rentals. And that's just clarinets. As an overall statistic, it's somewhere between 10 and 15%. But the clarinets was just a massive jump that we had no way to predict it. And right now we're left kind of scrambling going, okay. I'm telling customers about 3.5 weeks on turnaround time to get a repair completed right now. And honestly, I'm really close to increasing that to a full 4 weeks because I just don't have the time. We just kind of knuckle under and do the work. We're really looking forward to finishing up what's looking to be our busiest rental season ever. It's one of those things that what we keep telling ourselves is it's a good problem to have. It doesn't make it any less of a problem.
That's Avery McDaniel. He's the owner and lead technician of McDaniel Music Repair. Busy as you can get in Beloit, Wisconsin. You know, we cannot do this series without you. So do us a favor. Would you tell us what is going on with you at marketplace.org/myeconomy? Coming up.
Red could be an issue. Black could be an issue. Any of the deep colors can be issues.
Time to break out the color wheel, I guess. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 197 points today, 0.6% to finish at 31,019 for the blue chips. NASDAQ up 86 points, 0.7%, 11,535. The S&P 500 grew 26 points, 0.6%, 38,099. As Justin was telling us, homebuilder confidence is down again this month. So look at some of the big home construction companies, shall we? D.R. Horton nailed on 2.7%. Toll Brothers moved up 2.1%. Meritage Homes added on 2.3%. That ought to take care of some of their confidence, right? Kristen Schwab looked at the uptick in items stolen from retailers and how some companies are dealing with that. Starbucks that announced this summer it would close some of its shops in several cities, citing crime concerns, steamed up 0.9%. Target delivered 0.4%. Walgreens Boots Alliance lost 0.3%. Today, the FTSE was closed today in the UK. France's CAC 40 off about 0.25%. Germany's DAX added 0.4%. Today, you're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The latest figures we have are that 95% of the people on Puerto Rico are still without power today. That is, the island deals with the aftermath of the 30 inches of rain, 30 inches that Hurricane Fiona dumped on them. This storm comes almost 5 years to the day after Hurricane Maria wiped out Puerto Rico's electrical grid, leaving a lot of people without power for more than a year. And just a couple of weeks ago, the federal government promised $9.5 billion to rebuild Puerto Rico's grid and make it more resilient against storms like this. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on what people are going to be doing in the meantime.
Architect Vanessa Damari lives on the outskirts of San Juan. Her home's been without power and running water since Sunday morning. It was her 16-year-old daughter who suggested they start collecting rainwater to flush the toilets.
She said, "Mom, I have to go to the bathroom. We have not collected water."
Damari also has emergency supplies, drinking water, canned sausages, and a generator they use at night. They're the kind of preparations many households have made.
It took Puerto Rico approximately 50 years to build the island-wide grid. And then Maria destroyed that in a day and a half.
Sergio Marswatch is with the Center for the New Economy, a think tank based in San Juan. The government put a couple of billion dollars towards emergency repairs for the grid. But he says that's not enough.
You have to create a grid that can work in segments so the entire island doesn't lose power when you get a storm from the south.
He says to make that happen would take about $14 billion in 10 years. And some say that grid needs to rely on renewables. Ingrid Vila with the Puerto Rican nonprofit Cambio is advocating for a proposal with an evocative name.
It's Queremos Sol, so it's We Want Sun in Spanish, where you would have people obviously generate power within their houses and accompanied with storage with batteries.
And if the government doesn't fix the grid, architect Vanessa Damari says Puerto Rico will suffer.
People are not going to come to live. People are not going to come to visit. People are not going to come to work.
After Hurricane Maria, more than 133,000 people left Puerto Rico in 2018 for the mainland U.S., up more than a third from the year before. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Here's one from the more things change, the more they stay the same folder. While parts of the supply chain, as you know, are unkludging themselves, other parts are not. And in that latter category is paint, still kludged. So we've gotten Ryan Amato back on the phone. He runs Ryan Amato Painting, LLC. Mr. Amato, good to have you back on, sir.
It's great to be here again.
So it's been a year since we talked to you about the great paint shortage of 2021. Still happening?
Still happening. Wow. In various different ways, but certainly still an issue.
Well, give me some for instances. Like if I need, so honest, this is a dead serious question. My house needs to be painted. We're calling the guy today. Is he going to tell me, I'm sorry, it's going to be an extra 27% because I can't get paint?
He's going to tell you that paint has significantly went up in price. It also depends on what colors you choose. So that's been our main issue, the type of color and the type of paint you want to use.
Red. How's red? I need red outside paint.
Red could be an issue. Black could be an issue. Any of the deep colors can be issues, depending on the ingredient of certain paints.
So can we break this down for a minute, right? Because obviously paint is chemical and there's a bunch of inputs to it. Is there something specific in the supply chain that's the choke point, or is it just everything that goes into a gallon of paint?
It's been certain resins. We've felt it more on our commercial end. So when we're painting stores or industrial facilities, epoxies, they have been some major issues for us, where we're scrambling to find materials from every different vendor. What we found and heard from all of our large suppliers is they've prioritized their core products, but it left us with a shortage of some unique products, clear coats, oil-based products, anything with solvents in them.
Speaking of shortages, let me ask you about the labor market. Do you have enough people to hire to do the painting that you can do with the paint that you have?
We have been very fortunate. We've actually doubled our team. We have not seen that on our end. However, again, with the paint shortages, we've seen it on drivers delivering product inside the paint stores, just people working behind the desk. So that's been another issue that just adds to the issues with the supply chain.
Have you had to raise pay?
We've certainly raised pay to keep our staff well-trained, to bring people in. Some people are getting very significant offers out there from other companies with many, many different types of bonuses to sign on, heavy long vacation times to start. And that's been hard for, we're pretty much a small business.
Wow. When you say you've doubled your staff, how many does that give you now?
We are about 30 painters. We've added another project manager, and we've added a operations manager finally.
Well, that's good, right? It's got to take some load off of you as the guy in charge.
That's my goal. That's my total goal.
How long do you expect this lasts, Mr. Romano?
I actually talked to some of the vendors before we hopped on here today, and they feel that they're very well equipped for, again, the core products.
Mm-hmm.
They were all hoping that demand was going to lessen and it would give them some time to catch up. That just has not happened. It hasn't happened on our end either. Demand's been strong for us since the pandemic started.
Wow.
They do still feel it's going to be a certain amount of time for all the other products that we do use, especially epoxy. Yeah. That's been an issue.
As far as you're concerned, though, I mean, just on that whole, you know, you guys have been busy since the pandemic. That's going to keep on going for you. You're expecting that?
We do expect it. We know our company in particular, we're very aggressive. I try to stay on top of the market. Facility and commercial work has just opened up, and it feels like people are spending money for sure.
Ryan Amato, he runs and owns Ryan Amato Painting out of Easton, Pennsylvania. Mr. Amato, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Anytime.
This final note on the way out today, not so much a marketplace angle as a, hey, be careful out there, would you, angle. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration released traffic fatality figures for the second quarter of the year today. That's April to June. Off, that is to say, down almost 5% from a year earlier. Still, though, more than 10,000 people killed in car crashes in that period. It is, though, the first decline in traffic deaths after seven quarters, more than a year and a half, of rising fatalities that started just about when the pandemic did. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. I wanted to pull this out so you all heard it instead of just sticking in the numbers, which my theory is nobody listens to the very end, but, you know, maybe that's just me. Anyway, the yield on the 10-year Treasury note today, that's basically the interest rate, right, closed at 3.489% on this Monday. That is the highest the 10-year yield has been in a decade. Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giang, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.